June is here, which means it's finally time to reach for your summer wardrobe. And if you're trying to look good without overheating, Quince is your best bet. Their summer collection has all the warm weather staples, breathable linen, washable silk, and soft organic cotton. I now own their 100% linen pants in more colors than I'd like to admit. And the best part is that you get all that quality without the luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a destination for elevated essentials across the home, from kitchen to bedding, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/campus for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/campus for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/campus.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's being called the largest college admissions fraud in U.S. history. 50 people are being charged in a case the feds have nicknamed Operation Varsity Blues.
As part of his guilty plea, Singer admitted to facilitating bribing those coaches and university administrators to guarantee his clients' children would be admitted as recruited athletes.
It was a massive sting exposing an ugly truth that admission to college can be bought, bartered, and stolen for some.
If you listen to season one of our podcast, Gangster Capitalism, you already know the broad strokes of Operation Varsity Blues, the largest college admission scandal in American history. Mastermind Rick Singer helped some of the country's wealthiest and most powerful families bribe their children's way into elite universities. When we produced that podcast, we interviewed people caught up in the scheme and experts who had studied it. But one crucial voice was missing. We tried to speak with someone from the prosecution team, unsuccessfully. The investigation was still active, and no one on the law enforcement side would talk. Now, that's changed. In this episode, we bring you the story behind the story from the prosecutor who uncovered it all. I'm Margot Gray. This week on Campus Files, the inside story of Operation Varsity Blues through the eyes of prosecutor Eric Rosen. The investigation we now know as Operation Varsity Blues didn't begin the way you might expect. There were no tips from suspicious admissions officers or federal agents staking out college campuses. It started by chance, thanks to a completely unrelated investigation. At the time, Eric Rosen was working in the Economic Crimes Unit of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston, handling cases like securities fraud, money laundering, and bribery. He was working on a typical white-collar case, a pump-and-dump scheme. Basically, someone talks up a company, they hype it, promote it, get people excited about its potential. The stock price climbs. Then, at just the right moment, they cash out, selling their shares for a profit while everyone else watches their investment crumble. Here's Eric.
There's a famous case where a New Jersey deli, a single deli, was valued at like $100 million because it went public. But effectively what happens is that once the sort of the music stops, once the sort of promotion ends, once the sort of like manipulative trading ends, there's no real value.
Back in 2018, Eric was making headway on a classic pump and dump scheme. One of the players had scammed investors out of $15 million. His name was Maury Tobin.
Maury lived in this huge mansion. He had made it in life running these schemes. He was a Canadian guy, probably in his mid-50s, looked about 40, very fit, active, a guy that people wanted to be friends with, and he could convince people to buy his shares.
Eric and his team had enough on Maury to bring him in. So on Valentine's Day 2018, the FBI raided his home. Facing serious prison time, Maury was offered an enticing deal. Cooperate, tell us everything you know, and we'll consider recommending a lighter sentence. 2 weeks later, in the middle of a massive snowstorm, Maury flew to Boston. He was ready to talk.
Maury is a guy that you can talk to for an hour and learn nothing. He literally talks around and around to the point where you're like, what just happened to me? I have no idea. He can't answer the simple question, what's your name? And you get a 30-minute response, and he doesn't even tell you his name.
On the first day of questioning, investigators were focused on the basics. What stocks were involved? Who else was part of the scheme? And who could Maury help them build cases against?
And the next day, his lawyers sort of pull me aside and say, hey, Eric, there's something else he has going on that you may be interested in. Not really a big deal, but with the spirit of cooperation is you tell everything. And so we said, oh, what is it?
At first, Maury was very reluctant to discuss it, but eventually they got it out of him.
Maury told us that he had worked out a deal with the Yale soccer coach to effectively recruit his daughter, who was an okay soccer player, but certainly not a Ivy League recruit, as a soccer player onto the Yale soccer team in exchange for money. And so this was the first time I had ever heard that people would actually do that.
Eric was puzzled. How did a college coach end up at the center of an admission scheme? It didn't add up. But this was uncharted territory for him. His background in white-collar crime hadn't exactly prepared him for the world of college admissions.
The last time I had paid attention to the world of college admissions was 1996, when I was applying to college, and that was sort of it. You sort of do it, it sucks, and then you move on with your life.
So Eric dove into research, and eventually, the coach's role clicked into place. Athletic recruitment, he discovered, was one of the most reliable pathways into elite universities. Coaches wield enormous power over admissions decisions.
If you have two people that are of equal standing and academically, and one's a recruit and one's not, the chance of admission probably for someone that's not into a place like Yale is 3 or 4%. But if you're a recruit, it gets up to 85, 90%.
That's why Maury was bribing the Yale soccer coach, which begged the question, if he could buy a roster spot, how many others had done the same?
So at this point, the investigation sort of split. One side was the stock stuff, and the other side was the Yale soccer coach. And so being from Boston, there's nothing we like better than taking down Yale. So we put our, you know, the agents to work.
Eric gave the case a name, Operation Free Kick, a playful nod to soccer. He figured it would be straightforward, a simple open shut case. One bad actor in Yale's soccer department. The plan was simple. They just needed the coach to admit to taking bribes. So Eric's team had Maury set up a meeting. There was nothing suspicious about it. After all, Maury and the coach had already shaken hands on a deal. They were just negotiating over the final price. The meeting would take place at the Long Wharf Marriott in Boston.
Sort of a fun fact, I had my senior prom there. But that wasn't why it was chosen. So they wired up the room. They had a video camera recording everything. And Maury was a terrific cooperator. And they actually wrote out a bribe contract, which is not typical in the bribery industry.
In other words, the coach didn't just verbally admit to the scheme. He spelled it out in writing. Then he accepted $2,000 in cash from Maury and gave instructions for where to send the rest of the money. It was everything investigators needed. Case closed. Until the coach said one more thing.
And he mentioned, hey, Maury, there's a guy out in LA who this is his job. He like flies around the country, meets with coaches, recruits people who aren't real athletes onto their teams, pays coaches, pays athletic programs. That's what he does for a living.
The man's name? Rick Singer.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
Hey, it's Anna Sale, host of Death, Sex, and Money, the show from Slate about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. Many of us have something going on behind closed doors, like a listener we called Elizabeth, who told us she's a hoarder.
I see mess beyond probably what most people think of when they think of mess.
We'll work through it all together on Death, Sex, and Money. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Eric never imagined he'd be investigating college admissions corruption. What began as a routine white-collar case had somehow led him to a Yale soccer coach. And now, it looked like the investigation was about to get even bigger because the coach had revealed something major. He wasn't the only coach taking bribes. According to him, there was a man in LA who had turned this into a full-blown business, arranging similar deals for wealthy parents across the country. A man named Rick Singer. But how did it actually work? What were the mechanics behind such an elaborate scheme? The first major clue came that very same day. The subpoenaed bank records from the coach had just come in.
The Yale soccer coach had taken about $850,000 from something called the Key Worldwide Foundation, and every check was signed by Rick Singer. At that point, we knew we were on to something bigger than just one coach. No one could come up with that type of money just for one-off deals. And so we launched a much bigger investigation.
They started digging into the Key Worldwide Foundation, the organization that had paid the Yale soccer coach. On paper, it was a charity meant to help disadvantaged high school students. Eventually, Eric and his team discovered that Key Worldwide was less of a charity and more of a front, a way for wealthy parents to funnel bribes disguised as charitable donations, and for Rick Singer to quietly pass that money along to coaches. But even after they figured that out, the numbers didn't make sense. For starters, the donation amounts were all over the place.
Donations from $15,000 on up to $1 million, or I think there was actually a $6 million one at one point.
Investigators hoped that Rick's emails, obtained through a search warrant, would give them some answers. But if they were expecting anything straightforward, they were out of luck.
You get this massive tranche of stuff, hundreds of thousands of emails. The people conducting the review of the emails are humans, people like me. And your job is not just to go through them, but you have to like put together the pieces. So you have to create like chronologies of what happened when.
Amid the thousands of emails, investigators spotted things that caught their attention. Celebrity names scattered throughout the correspondences. And something even more bizarre, photoshopped pictures. By now, you've probably seen them yourself. Teenagers' faces pasted onto the bodies of real athletes. Water polo players, sailors, tennis stars. Suspicious, sure, but not a smoking gun. Because proving those students weren't actual athletes was tricky. Just because a Google search came up empty didn't mean much.
You Google yourself, like stuff you did is not on there. Doesn't mean you're a liar. It just means that things get washed out throughout the years.
The obvious next step would have been to subpoena records from the students' high school. Find out if they played varsity or if they were really Division I material. But that wasn't an option in this investigation.
There's a federal law called FERPA, which prevents people, you know, school administrators from telling a student about grand jury subpoenas and the like. But the problem there is that it doesn't apply to a lot of these private schools.
As a result, reaching out to the schools risked blowing the entire investigation. That left investigators at a dead end. To Eric, the next step was clear. They needed a wiretap, which is a surveillance tool where neither party knows or consents to being recorded. Because it's such a serious invasion of privacy, getting it approved is challenging.
The procedure for getting a wiretap is extremely complicated. You have to get internal approvals from people in your unit that read these affidavits that are sometimes 100 pages long that you've drafted. You then present it to a higher level DOJ official, and then you have to take it to a federal judge who then reads the entire packet and either signs it or doesn't sign it. But you have to do that every month. They last for 30 days. And so by 2 weeks, you're sitting there at your computer writing the next affidavit because it takes that long.
But Eric knew it was worth pursuing. He'd handled plenty of wiretaps before, back when he was prosecuting drug cases. And he knew better than most. Few things are more powerful in court than a defendant admitting to a crime in their own voice. Eventually, his team secured the wiretap. And fortunately for them, Rick Singer was a guy who liked to talk.
One of the interesting things about Rick Singer is, like, part of his pitch was that he would make house calls at students' houses. People love that. You live in these communities out in California, you know, they don't want to drive down the hills and get into the town to go to a center. So Rick would motor around all day driving from house to house in LA traffic. And the only thing that he could do while sitting in traffic was talk on the phone. So you have someone talking on the phone 11, 12 hours a day.
Through those wiretapped calls, investigators began to understand the discrepancy in payments. Singer was offering a range of services for different amounts. This included illicit test-taking services. To run that part of the scheme, Singer enlisted Mark Riddell, a brilliant Harvard graduate. In the early days of the scheme, Riddell would take the exams himself, pretending to be the student.
Eventually, you age out of that when the 30-year-old guy shows up trying to take the SAT for the 12th time. So he switched, and the easiest way to do it going forward was to corrupt testing centers themselves.
Singer had paid off two testing centers, one in Houston, the other in LA, to sneak Mark in as a proctor.
Mark Riddell would sort of fly around a couple times a year, five, six times a year, and administer the test.
In some cases, that meant Mark gave students the answers during the test. In others, he corrected their answer sheets afterwards. It just depended on whether the students were looped in on the scheme.
Mark would be paid about $10,000 per test. The testing center would be paid $10,000. That's $20,000. And so sometimes you have parents paying $50,000 or $100,000, and that would be Rick's cut of the test. The price varied based on Rick thinking your ability to pay.
In other words, there was no set price. Rick adjusted his fees based on what he thought each family could afford. Investigators only pieced this together after listening to hours of recorded calls. These wiretapped conversations also revealed the full scope of Rick's so-called side door into elite colleges. What you're about to hear is a reenactment of Rick describing that to a parent. It's based on real wiretap transcripts and originally aired in our podcast, Gangster Capitalism.
So who we are, what we do, is we help the wealthiest families in the U.S. get their kids into school. They want guarantees. They want this thing done. So I did 761, what I would call side doors. There's a front door, which means you get in on your own. The back door is through institutional advancement, which is 10 times as much money. And I've created this side door in.
After 4 months of listening to calls like this, Eric and his team had what they needed. They were ready to confront Rick Singer. To do it, they enlisted the help of the Yale soccer coach, who is now cooperating. The soccer coach reached out to Singer, saying he had a business opportunity.
And he says, listen, there's a guy at Harvard, and this Harvard guy wants to meet you. And he doesn't want to meet over the phone, which is, you know, understandable. He wants to meet in person, sort of suss you out. But for someone like Rick, the holy grail was getting someone into Harvard. And so that was a really big opportunity for him.
Singer was told the meeting would take place at the Long Wharf Marriott in Boston, the same hotel where not long before the coach himself had landed in the FBI's crosshairs. On September 21st, Singer boarded a flight from Los Angeles to Boston, unaware that he was stepping directly into Eric's carefully laid trap.
You know that thing where you get an amazing pair of shoes at a really great price and want to tell everyone about it? Yeah, so do we. Here at Designer Shoe Warehouse, we'll give you something to brag about. Like the latest styles from brands you love, or the trends everyone's obsessing over, or shoes that make you feel like, well, you. So go ahead, show off a little. Find shoes that get you at prices that get your budget. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today. DSW, let us surprise you.
DMV summers are no joke. The heat, the humidity, the beltway at 5 p.m. AC season is here and your car needs to keep up. Rota is the DMV's most trusted auto shop with over 1,000 five-star Google reviews. From AC checks to oil changes to detailing, we keep your car ready with no hidden fees and no pressure. Plus, free valet pickup and drop-off, so you don't have to lift a finger. Book at rota.com and save 20% on maintenance, repairs, or detailing with code POD20.
Rick Singer had landed exactly where investigators wanted him. Shortly after entering the hotel room in Boston, he was met by three FBI agents and an IRS investigator. From the start, it was clear he was in serious trouble. Investigators had a firm handle on the scheme. The bogus athlete profiles, the fraudulent test scores, the millions of dollars funneled through his so-called charity. But their work wasn't done. To seal the case, they still needed Singer to cooperate.
We had all the paperwork, we had figured out what happened, but we wanted someone to admit what they had done in a telephone call or something like that recorded.
In white-collar cases like this, it's not enough to show that someone gave money to Singer. Prosecutors had to prove that parents knew they were doing something shady, that they were paying bribes and not just donating to the Key Worldwide Foundation. That's where Singer came in. By cooperating, he could get parents and coaches on the phone and lead them to incriminate themselves. And ultimately, that's exactly what he did, helping prosecutors build cases against more than 50 people.
It's huge. There are 50 plus people. We had spent an enormous amount of time trying to make sure we got everything right. We vetted, you know, it's not like you just lump people in. You vet each one, the evidence, or people we took out.
Because of the sheer number of charges and the high standard of evidence, Eric says the weeks leading up to the takedown were among the most intense of his life, both personally and professionally.
Just working around the clock. I think the weekend before getting it signed by the judge, I stayed up effectively two nights in a row.
The takedown was scheduled for March 12, 2019. That morning, around 4 a.m., Eric and his team arrived at FBI offices in Chelsea, Massachusetts, where they gathered around a giant screen to watch the arrests unfold in real time. By 6 a.m., FBI agents were fanned out across the country, barging into the homes of some of the wealthiest and most powerful families in America. In some cases, agents entered the homes with guns drawn. After the arrests, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston alerted the media that there would be a press conference. Dozens of individuals were being charged in a sweeping college admission scheme. But at this point, Eric still wasn't sure anyone would care.
At that point, you still don't really know what people are going to think. The biggest concern was that no one would take the case seriously and think it was sort of government overreach.
In retrospect, that sounds silly, considering the absolute media frenzy that followed. But during the investigation, Eric saw no signs that this would become a national story. If anything, the signs pointed the other way.
I was working with a prosecutor in LA, a friend of mine, actually, because we needed someone to like take the warrant down, get it signed for the arresting process. And so we sent them that paperwork a couple of days before, and he was laughing at me, saying, "This is the dumbest case. No one's going to care about it."
Good morning. We're here today to announce charges in the largest college admissions scam ever prosecuted by the Department of Justice. We've charged 50 people nationwide with participating.
I had been to press conferences before in the U.S. Attorney's Office, and like mainly you get three or four reporters, local news, and like that type of thing. When we walked in, it was unreal. It was CNN. It was everybody that was anyone was there, or their local correspondent. Because remember, they didn't have a lot of notice. Anybody who had like a Boston correspondent was there. It was packed. But you don't know if, like, is this live or people going to do it in the evening news? And so you don't really know. But then all I heard was like the phone in my pocket vibrating. And then at that point, you know, I sort of obviously knew that people were watching this live and that it was a big deal.
This case is about the widening corruption of elite college admissions through the steady application of wealth combined with fraud.
I didn't do any of the talking. I was sitting there behind the U.S. attorney, and then the head of the FBI gives his talk. And that's where he said that this was Operation Varsity Blues, a name that I thought was completely stupid. I refused to use it, but then it just sort of stuck. No one used Operation Free Kick. That was quickly discarded.
After the press conference, Eric returned to his office to find his phone ringing off the hook.
Literally, the torrent of press that followed was just so shocking and unbelievable. I still sort of can't imagine it to this day. Just walls of reporters at the entrance to the courthouse because cameras aren't allowed in, people having to sneak in the back door, defendants getting completely mobbed by the press and by bystanders, people signing autographs. I mean, it was absolutely insane.
This story is a bombshell. Dozens of rich parents, including Hollywood actors, accused of straight up bribing their kids' way into college.
The schools named in this indictment include Georgetown, Stanford, UCLA, the University
Federal
of San Diego.
Prosecutors say Singer took in more than $25 million from his clients.
In many ways, the attention the case received far outweighed its actual scale or the number of people charged.
We're talking about 50 plus over the course of 5 or 6, 7 years, like a drop in the bucket. But obviously people thought this was like the tip of the iceberg. This just sort of confirmed everyone's sort of worst fears as to the game is rigged and it's sort of rigged against me.
While the heated debates over privilege and the broader media storm have mostly receded from the headlines, the case's impact on college admissions has endured.
The schools became a lot more compliance focused, so they didn't just take the word of the various coaches, but they would screen student athletes, follow up, and have like a real vetting process to make sure that they were real.
Another significant shift in college admissions has been standardized testing, which was first hit by the scandal and then by the COVID pandemic.
The testing agencies took a massive hit. California, for example, eliminated requirement for the state schools of taking these tests. And that's like a million people a year. And that's a massive revenue hit. I remember talking with the head of one a year later, and they're like, we liked working with you, but you destroyed us.
On the flip side, a lot has not changed when it comes to college admissions. The playing field is still very uneven. Take standardized testing again, for example. While some aspects of the testing system have come under tighter control, wealthy students still have a much easier time securing accommodations.
The extra time that people get that starts in high school, generally you have to pay for a psychologist or psychiatrist report, and then you have to work with your school to implement it and develop a plan. The private schools are a lot better about that. They care that people are happy there. And so they let the kid get extra time in the classroom and then on the college admissions tests as well. So huge income disparities in terms of who gets this extra time and the disabilities and who doesn't.
A common criticism of the case is that it actually perpetuated these existing wealth disparities. Most of the perpetrators served minimal prison time. For example, actress Felicity Huffman spent just 11 days behind bars.
It is a minimum security facility and is said to be fairly cushy with no bars. Some prisoners refer to it as Chateau Dublin.
But Eric Rosen insists the goal was never to put defendants behind bars for extended periods of time. He instead described this as what's called an impact case, a case designed not just to punish a few individuals, but to send a broader message and deter future misconduct.
There are cases that you do as a prosecutor where you're trying to get a lengthy sentence for people because you need to be punished. You need to be like child pornography. You need to be removed. This was not that. this was not about like the sentence that people got. Everybody was always like, are you disappointed in the sentencing and how it turned out? And no, the answer is no. The defendants, they were on national TV. They were publicly shamed. It cost them a lot of money. The impact was that I don't think people are running this type of scam again. And that was sort of the point.
Hopefully, nobody understands that lesson better than Rick Singer himself. Fresh out of federal prison, Singer has launched a new college counseling service. In the Who We Are section of the company's website, Singer says, I am not afraid to tell people who I am and that I made a mistake. And he goes on to say, we will continue to utilize our deep relationships with the respected decision makers at colleges and universities, but will not stray from staying and living in good standing. Campus Files is an Odyssey original podcast. This episode was written and reported by Margot Gray. Campus Files is produced by Ian Mont, Elliot Adler, and me, Margot Gray. Our executive producers and story editors are Maddie Sprunkheiser and Lloyd Lockridge. Campus Files is edited, mixed, and mastered by Chris Basil and Andy Jaskowitz. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman, J.D. Crowley, Leah Reese-Dennis, Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Kurt Courtney, Hilary Schuff, Sean Cherry, Laura Berman, and Hilary Van Ornum. Original theme music by James Waterman and Davey Sumner. If you have tips or story ideas, write to us at campusfilespod@gmail.com.